Today on the program, we're going to devote the entire 90 minutes, as a matter of fact, to taking a look at consumer protection issues, consumer concerns. We can take a look at tenant-landlord issues, back-to-school issues. I mean, there's a lot going on at this time of the year, and it's easy to kind of forget about some of the little things that can trip you up. And so we've asked Sandy Chalmers back. Sandy's administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection. Michelle Reinen is the director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade, and Consumer Protection. So it's great to have them back. And certainly, I hope you'll join in with your questions and comments as we move along today. You can reach us at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can also post a question on our Facebook page. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show. Sandy Chalmers, welcome back.
Good morning, Larry.
Great to see you. And Michelle, great to see you as well.
It's nice to see you as well.
We have lots of things we can talk about. I mean, this past weekend was a huge move-out, move-in day for apartments in Madison. I suspect that happened in Eau Claire and maybe La Crosse and Green Bay and a whole lot of other places, too. Let's talk about that from both a tenant and a landlord perspective, because, you know, moving in, moving out. Let's start with the tenants. What should they keep in mind when moving into a new apartment?
Well, since it just happened here in Madison, one of the most important things that the tenant should think about is that they have 7 days to inspect their premises and turn in this check-in form, complete a check-in form about the condition of the apartment when they moved in. And that helps them on the back end when they're moving out to collect their security deposit, so they're not charged for things that were damaged when they moved in. They won't be held responsible.
And that's a big thing. I mean, you know, you have 7 days to do it. I mean, it might vary. Would it vary across the state?
No? Well, the state law is seven days.
7 days.
So
okay.
If there is a city ordinance, maybe it gives them more time, but you can't be given less time. 7 days is what it should be. So we're still in that window if you're in the Madison area, if you moved in on like the 15th.
Okay. And, you know, if you're a freshman or a sophomore, you know, haven't been here before, or even if you have, it's an exciting time and it's easy to forget that sort of thing.
That's right. So it's just take a few minutes. If you weren't supplied a form, just take a piece of notebook paper and go through the apartment. Look at the walls. Are there any holes in the walls? Does the oven have all its knobs? You know, what's the condition on the inside of the oven? Are there big burn marks or something, so you're just not held responsible.
Big hole in the wall behind that picture that's up there.
That's right, where the doorknob belongs. No.
Okay, so that's something for the tenant. What about the landlord?
Well, the same thing. I mean, the landlord should be communicating with their tenant. This happens when they sign the contract for the terms, but it's good for the landlord to make sure that they're giving everything in writing to the tenant so there's clear communication on both sides. This is what's expected. These are the rules. Here is a check-in form because it protects the landlord on the same end if they know the condition of their premise when the tenant moves in. Because if the tenant does do damage, they can hold security deposit at the end for that.
And of course, back to school time, not just for the college kids, but for everyone. We have, you know, we have a third grader going back to school this year. She's excited about that. She actually starts next week on the 23rd. So, and I know a lot of other kids will be starting within the next week or two. Lots of shopping for supplies, books, clothes, and more. What should shoppers keep in mind when they may be rushing to get the shopping done quickly? Sandy, you want to talk? Yeah, go ahead.
There's a lot of shopping involved with back to school, and moms and dads everywhere, including Wisconsin, are searching out the best deals available. And you'll typically see the Sunday paper full of ads on back to school deals. Well, in Wisconsin, the law says that stores are to charge the lowest advertised price and refund any overcharge. So pay attention when you're walking through the stores, because the lowest advertised price may be on a store display. And when you go through the checkout, make sure that what was posted on the store display matches what's displayed on the register.
And we do find mistakes pretty often, I think of past, I can remember talking about this in past years where oftentimes there are mistakes.
There are. And it's easy to happen when there's a lot of competition for your back-to-school shopping dollar right now, and prices are changing frequently. So it's really in your best interest as the consumer to keep track of what the advertised price is. But we do have inspectors that travel throughout the state checking the accuracy of those price scanners and the scanner displays at the checkout. And the accuracy rates are pretty high.
Pretty
good. They were 99.2% accuracy rate. But what I'm worried about is that 0.8% there that is not accurate. And back-to-school shopping is a time when there are so many hundreds of dollars at stake, as you know, when you're shopping for your third grader.
Yes.
It can be a quite expensive proposition.
Yeah. On the checkout, have you done anything on the self-checkout that we're seeing so often in stores now where the consumer himself or herself does the checkout?
Well, that's part of the scanning system at most stores.
So it'd be the same.
Mm-hmm. We're making sure some stores are hooked up to a network or they check in all the individual scanners. So the inspectors are checking that. But consumers, if they find something, need to bring it to the checkout clerk's attention as soon as they see it so it can be corrected at that point in time. And then they can deal with it for all the other customers as well.
Yeah.
So if you think you're being overcharged, speak up at the register and demand a refund while you're still in the store, and you'll be more likely to get it. But also ask about the store's pricing error policy and make sure that you're refunded the difference between what the advertised price was and what you were going to be charged at the register.
You can join in, too, with your questions and comments at 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And Steve and Darianne up with a question for you, too. So let's go there. Hi, Steve.
Hey, I was just wondering, recently I heard a news article on the radio where banks had been forced to restructure their checking fees because of recent policy changes. And so they're coming up with an idea now that they want to put a $3 charge on, I believe it was either credit cards or debit cards. How can they just all of a sudden create a charge for no reason? I mean, they didn't give any other reason other than we lost money here, so now we want to make it over here. You know, this is just a case of one of these bankers that's going to end up being worth a $100 million bonus at the end of the year because he found some other way to take money from the poor and pad the pockets of the rich, really.
Well, let me, Michelle, do you want to take that?
I can try. You know, as far as the debit card and credit card regulations, it's not something we handle every day. Right. There's another state agency that does deal with a lot of that. And some things come down from the federal government as well as restrictions, things banks can and can't do. But banks should be disclosing this to customers so they know up front what these fees are going to be as far as the regulations behind when they can and can't do things. I don't have specifics, but there should be disclosure to consumers so they know ahead of time and don't end up having to pay charges they weren't aware of.
Mm-hmm. We have more callers online. An email from Darlene in Tomahawk. I worked this last recall election. We had an absentee voter who refused to send in a valid ballot because solely due to campaign phone calls. Plus, many people were not only glad the phone calls will stop post-recall, but wondered why we can't do a do-not-call list for those robocalls. I know that we're always told that campaign calls and charitable calls are exempt from the do-not-call list. Why is that the case? And Sandy, do you want to take that one?
Thank you, Darlene, for that question. That's probably the most frequent thing I'm asked as I travel around the state. People are fed up with these telemarketing calls, and especially recently, we've had a large influx of political-type calls. Wisconsin law specifically exempts political, charitable organizations, surveys from the provisions of the no-call law. So that is why you're getting so many calls, because it's legal. There have been bills introduced to change that, but thus far the legislature has not seen fit to change the law.
So there you go. They're following the law when they're doing that.
Yes, they are.
Donna in Pewaukee, we turn to you next. Hi, Donna.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Excuse me, I have a sore throat, so please bear with me. I have some tenant questions.
Okay.
One of them is, my husband and I no longer have a lease. It's month to month.
Okay.
But our landlord keeps raising the rent, and we have a lot of maintenance issues he's not getting to. Can we hold our rent because the maintenance issues are not being addressed or done?
I bet you that's a question a lot of you've heard before, Michelle Renan.
This sure does come up as far as withholding rent, and this is an area where you need to be careful, because if you're withholding rent, you run the risk of having an eviction filed against you. If you're a month-to-month, the landlord can be raising the rent as long as he's giving you proper notice of the increase in rent. Now, him not addressing the maintenance issues, it depends if these are potential building code, health, or safety issues.
Well,
so if he's not addressing those, you will want to contact your local inspector and report them that way, and then there may be a rent abatement, a legal form of withholding that you can go through until those charges are or until those issues are corrected. And then the pot of money would be there for the landlord to correct. So it really depends on what the issues are and whose duty it is to maintain those issues. Because the tenants do have some responsibility to maintain some of the premises. It depends how your lease is laid out. But if they're building code or health or safety issues, your building inspector...
So your local building...
My local city inspector.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, second question. He's always coming over unannounced, without a notice.
Are they emergency situations?
No.
No.
Yeah, that's...
24 hours notice, isn't it?
It's actually a 12 hours notice.
12 hours?
24 is the city of Madison. Certain ordinances have more advanced notice, so you could check in Pewaukee to see if they have an ordinance that would require more notice than the 12,
mm-hmm.
Unless it's an emergency situation. And you can approve less notice than 12, but it sounds like it's a situation where you don't want him coming over unannounced at all. So that's something you could be filing a complaint with our agency about, so we could be in communication with the landlord on what the laws are.
Okay.
All right.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks so much for calling. Appreciate your call. Mary Lou in Lake Tomahawk, on to you now. Hi, Mary Lou.
Oh, yes. Good morning. I was very surprised and shocked a couple of weeks ago when my 9-year-old daughter came home after purchasing some fake cigarettes. They look like cigarettes, and the tip of them is actually made of some chemical so that they glow. And I'm just wondering, is there any consumer protection or law against selling these pretend cigarettes to minors?
Oh, my goodness. Not something, I don't know, Michelle?
No, I'm not aware of anything that prevents that sale. There isn't anything in product safety law that bans the sale of that to minors. There's lots of things that look like adult products that are imitation for kids to play act. So it's one of those situations where you'll just have to decide as a parent what you'll do with the product.
Oh, a decision was made.
Yeah.
Other children with those things in their hands.
Oh, my
God.
It's just
such a bad example. And I was just livid. I was just so upset that somebody would try to make a profit out of selling that to children.
There have been bills introduced. This is kind of a similar issue to ban the lighters that look like toys. They're called novelty lighters. So far, there hasn't been any movement on that bill in the legislature, but that's something that comes up quite frequently.
Hmm. Thanks for when I was a kid, there were the candy cigarettes.
Right.
The white ones with a little orange tip or something on them, and I remember having some of those, and the candy was actually fairly tasty. But you're right, Mary Lou. It wasn't a very good example, was it?
No, it's not. I sure would like to see those taken off the shelves one way or the other.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And you can also post a complaint to the company itself, too. I mean, I wouldn't be afraid to send a letter to the company president and say, my daughter came home with this, and I can't believe you would sell something mm-hmm. like this.
Or the store where she bought them.
Yeah, that's that may be a good place to go, too. We have more callers, but there's an open line or two for you at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can post there as well. As we visit today with Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Ryan, who Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Our guests here, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer. I'm Larry Mueller on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking consumer protection issues, we've dealt with the tenant-landlord. We can certainly talk more about that. We can talk no-call. We can talk about your issue. If you've got one, join us. Connie in Arcadia has done that, so let's go to Connie. Hi, Connie.
This is really small, but it just irritated me yesterday. I saw the ad, and it said free shipping. So I called in an order, and the guy was, you know, checking it off at the end, and then there was a $10 charge, and I said, but it said free shipping. Oh, but there's a handling charge, he said. And it, you know, it's perfectly legal. That's what they said, but it just irritated me a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, those handling charges, they're something to make sure you're asking about and know about, because it's not always as good as it looks when you're purchasing something. So asking all the questions when you're doing some kind of mail order, what the return policy is, are there handling fees, what are the shipping fees, that kind of thing is important to take note of.
Very good.
All right. Thanks, Connie, for bringing that up. Steve in Richfield, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Steve.
Hi. Is there anything in the law that distinguishes what I would call damage and then something else that I would call normal wear and tear in an apartment?
All right.
Their normal wear and tear is not specifically defined in the law. It's up to a court commissioner and judge to sometimes make that evaluation as far as what is considered normal wear and tear and what is considered damage. But when something's not clearly defined, we go to the dictionary to look at what damage is. And we've also used, you know, other court precedents or experience to know. So a hole in the wall is going to be damage. A scuff mark on the linoleum is probably potentially normal wear and tear, because if you get out the magic eraser, you could probably get it out. But a big old scar in the linoleum that's not repairable is going to be damage. So we don't encourage white glove treatment, because that's, you know, not many people keep their house up to a white glove treatment standard where they can pass that test. Some dust is normal wear and tear. So
There you go. All right. Thanks a lot for calling. And Jane in Brookfield, on to you now. Hi, Jane.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I have a question that's sort of related. We have a tenant who wanted to move out as soon as possible and break their lease, and we found someone to take their place. But my question is, can I write them a letter that that says I'm not? I'd like to have more time than the 21 days to return their security deposit, because they broke the centerpiece of a stained glass window, and I have to have list come out, and it's in the boonies. It's hard to get someone way up there. They also have burn marks in the floor, in a wood floor, and a stain in a wood floor. I have to have a specialist to come out and give an estimate for that, and it's really hard to get someone up there because it's pretty far away.
Yeah,
unfortunately, there is no provision in the law where a letter saying I need more time is acceptable. It's you need to either return the security deposit within 21 days or provide an itemized deduction list as to what you're withholding the security deposit for. So you're going to need to, and it needs to be reasonable charges for things too. So you're going to need to do your best accurate guesstimating as you can to see what, I mean, you've listed three things there, and I don't know how large your security deposit is, but, you know, if you talk to the people over the phone and can kind of get a phone estimate for the stained glass and different things, you know, you may be able to reach your security deposit price. But
yeah, it's such a unique piece of that. I've sent emails out, and I say, here's the picture, and they say, we can't give you one unless we come and see it on site, and they're not available till such and such a date that's past the 21 days.
Wow.
Yeah, then may, you know, there's always the option of a small claims court if, as long as you follow the law and return the itemization or the money, and then you always have the option of going outside to the courts as well.
Did the tenant give you written notification that they were ending the lease?
No, they did not.
That makes it changes things a little bit.
Yeah, because they moved out early?
Yes.
Oh, yeah. See, I overlooked that part. That's a great catch, Sandy, is that the tenant needs to provide you written notice when they terminate a lease early to start the 21-day clock. Otherwise, it's the end of the lease term.
I think they said they had to move. They wanted to move out as soon as possible. So there wasn't like, I'm done on August 1st.
Did they give you the key?
Yeah, they gave me the key.
Yeah.
So that's sort of, okay.
If they didn't give you a written notice, but they gave you the key, you're going to probably want to use the key date. Because you have knowledge they're not there.
Right. Okay.
Oh. I'm sorry.
They left because they didn't have money to pay. So if I give the security deposit back, chances are, even if I take them to small claims court, I won't get that money anyway.
Well, did they pay their rent, their next month's rent? Because you can withhold security deposit for unpaid rent as well.
Fortunately, I found someone to replace them before the next month's rent came. It was a 5-day turnover.
Wow, that's
Boy,
great.
You did a good job there, Jane.
Yeah, I'm stuck.
Sorry, we have bad news for you, kind of.
Okay.
All right.
Can I estimate high? I mean, because the window alone probably is going to be a ton, and the floor.
Yeah,
that it's hard for us to get into what you should estimate. That becomes more difficult for us to do.
On the floor, is it a wood floor?
It's a wood floor. It looks like they just dropped their cigarette ashes on it, and it burned. And I mean, I might be looking at refinishing a whole floor.
I would think you could be able to get an estimate from somebody for refinishing that floor.
Yeah, that could be pretty high in and of itself.
Yeah, that's right. So, that you might be able to get pretty quickly because that doesn't, I would think that would be something that a person could estimate for you.
Right, okay. All right, thank you for taking my time.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for calling. And we have Mike in La Crosse up next. Hi, Mike.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
Well, basically, a while back, I had this situation with a landlord where there was a continuation clause on my lease at the end of the lease that the paper lease I signed for that year became the legal binding contract for the month-to-month lease terms. And I assumed that everything was enforced, including the written-out rent. Now, they sent me notice upon asking me to sign papers to return to them for a notice of a raise in the rent, and I disregarded the papers because I assumed it was like any other advertisement. As long as I don't sign it, I'm not bound to it.
Okay.
And then I actually had to pay late fees because I continued paying my same amount of rent because of the continuation clause was there wasn't any exclusions.
So, just so I'm clear, you were on a year's lease, and then they sent you paperwork that you signed that at the end of your year's lease, they sent you paperwork that you signed that turned your lease into a month-to-month?
No.
No, the 1-year lease had a continuation clause on it.
Okay, but you didn't sign anything new at the end of your year?
No, I didn't sign anything new. I just, all the flyers that I got from them, asking me to sign for a new lease or month-to-month rent agreement, I threw in the shredder because I didn't think I had any problems.
Yeah. If you converted to a month-to-month at the end, the landlord with the proper notification may be in a position where he can increase your rent just because he gave you notice of the increase.
But in this case, he didn't. The original contract said no increase in rent. If it specified no increase in rent, then
it specified that that the lease, the written out lease, would have the same, the month-to-month, it specified that the lease would turn into a month-to-month lease.
Right, but it didn't address whether or not there'd be an increase in rent at all or that the landlord could give you notice.
So I assumed it would stay the same because I figured all the, you know, the snow removal, the rent rate would all stay the same.
Yeah, but you move to a month-to-month, and in month-to-month rentals, what can happen is that landlords can give you notice of a rent increase and rents will go up. So this is one of those situations where if you want to lock into a specific rent, then that's where a longer-term signed contract, I mean, it locks you into a rent. But when you're month-to-month, either party can just give that same term of notice and change conditions.
Yeah.
And one of those things is rent.
Unfortunately. There you go, Mike. Sorry we couldn't give you more positive news there, but it sounds like the law was being interpreted correctly in that case. JJ in Milwaukee, we're on to you now.
Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
I guess I have a question slash issue regarding people who go into foreclosure, bankruptcy, and all that stuff because of X or Y reason. I did go through the whole thing after brain surgery, couldn't cope with the bills, blah, blah, blah. Notified the bank of everything. You know, I cannot cope with this. I'm going into bankruptcy protection. I'm going into foreclosure. And they still, even after they processed everything and after I was discharged without liability, they still did not change the name on the deed to be on the name of the bank. And, you know, interestingly enough, I just came back from the Milwaukee City Court because I'm dealing now with fines concerning the property, like exterior situations, like code violations because of the grass and siding and stuff like that that I did not took care of because I wasn't the owner of the house anymore. But according to the city, the bank did not change the name of the deed. I wonder if there's anything as far as consumer protection regarding that kind of thing.
Boy. Shaking some heads here. Michelle?
Consumer protection really doesn't have any authority or enforcement or anything with foreclosures and how that process works. So I don't have anything for him, unfortunately.
Is there another agency that handles that? Or would JJ be better off to seek out some legal...
That's what I would advise, that he get in touch with an attorney at this point.
Yeah, it's too bad because that costs money too.
Mm-hmm. Right.
There may be Milwaukee with
a legal aid or legal action may be able to assist him if it's based on a financial situation. So he may be able to contact one of those in the Milwaukee area.
So legal assistance, is it?
Legal aid or legal action, those are some of the names of the legal entities that are able to help people with income issues.
Okay.
Sounds good. I'll look into it. Thank you so much.
Yep, thank you for calling. And we have an email from Roger in Park Falls. I was under the impression that political campaign could not campaign on Election Day. I heard campaign commercials on Election Day for the last recall election on two local radio stations the day of. Isn't that illegal? Let's put it that way.
Our jurisdiction over campaign issues extends only as far as political telemarketing type calls. This may be an issue for the Government Accountability Board, I believe, but we don't have any laws or regulations that pertain to campaigning.
Here's a listener in Madison has a problem she'd like some help with. My landlord is always around my apartment. He walks around the apartments. He watches me enter the building. He's there when I wake up and sometimes when I go to sleep. He just walks around the premises waiting for me to do something wrong, I guess. I can't leave my blinds open because he's always around glancing in the apartment. He owns four buildings on the same block. and everybody else is complaining about him as well. I don't want to talk to him every day, which he manages to do. I don't need anything from him. The only thing he does with me is he tells me what to do. I hate it. Is there anything that I can do?
Unfortunately, if he's not entering the premises without notice or in case of an emergency, I mean, if he's not entering your premise, there isn't anything in the landlord-tenant law that you can do. I mean, you may want to talk. Technically, he owns that property, and he may be doing exterior inspections to make sure it's being up, you know, held, the upkeep is going well. And one of the landlord's jobs is to monitor their tenants and make sure they're maintaining the premises well. But, you know, you might want to talk to a local law enforcement official just to see if there's any advice that they would have, if, you know, you're concerned that way. But there isn't anything in landlord-tenant law prohibiting him from being able to be on the property.
And an email from Renee, a concerned parent in western Wisconsin. Are children at a public school protected consumers? What if their school has asbestos in need of removal with no plan for immediate removal? What would you do in that sort of situation? These are some tricky ones that fall outside. I think a lot of it falls outside your jurisdiction.
I would recommend that Renee get in touch with, first of all, the local school board. But you also might give the Department of Public Instruction a call and see if they have any recommendations for you.
No, that's not a bad idea. Steve in Lake Geneva, we're on to you now. Hi, Steve.
Hi there. Good morning.
Morning.
I hope I'm not strike four on your phone calls. I have a question about caretaker laws in Wisconsin. I take care of properties down in Walworth and Racine County, and I live on one of them now. But a few years ago, I was living on one, and I got extremely short notice, like 14 hours notice, that I needed to be out. Otherwise, the sheriff was going to be there the next day to evict me because she had rented out the whole property, all 200 acres. And I've been searching, and this has been 4 or 5 years now, and I've been searching on the Internet and trying to find any, I can't find any information. Is there anything that, does Wisconsin have caretaker laws? My understanding when I talked to Walworth County clerk, I believe it was, she said, you're technically not employed, but you're also technically not a renter on the property. So you don't fall into either one of those categories, and there was no other category. So I was looking for some recourse for money that still owed me, and it just seemed like, how could you throw somebody out in 12 hours?
Yeah.
So I'm just curious if you had any ideas. I don't mind doing all the footwork. I've been doing it anyway. It's just kind of, it's a burr in my underwear.
Yeah.
I wanna find out what I can do about this.
Yeah. The Walworth County, I think, that gave you the advice about you're not in this category and you're not in this category, you're not a renter and you're not an employee. They're right there. But two things I guess I could suggest is maybe call our hotline because they dig into these in more detail and would have the Wisconsin Way right in front of them to be able to look a little deeper at some of those unusual specifics because this is one of those rare cases.
Sure.
And they may have something. The other thing is maybe just talking with an attorney. Again, you know, they have a ready reference guide and could give you a lawyer referral number if need be to consult that way. If you were an employee and you haven't been paid for something, since you say there's some kind of payment, Department of Workforce
mostly
Development.
Receipts mostly.
Oh, okay. But, you know, reimbursement that the attorney may be able to help you with, and Department of Workforce Development may be able to assist you as well, depending upon how they define the relationship that you had as a caretaker.
We're getting into some things that may be contractual. So I think Michelle's advice is good to seek legal advice once again.
And the Consumer Protection Hotline, what is that number? We've had some people asking about that already.
That is a great resource for the people of this state. You can call and ask them about anything, and they will be able to at least point you in the right direction if they don't have an answer at their fingertips. The number is 1-800-422-7128, and that's toll-free in the state of Wisconsin.
800-422-7128.
Right.
Okay. There you go, Steve. Good luck. Thank you. Tom in Lincoln County, on to you now. Hi, Tom.
Hi. Say, I'm a recent survivor of the Hofer and Simic election, and I have to tell you, I'm not exaggerating, I promise. Over the last month, I had to run to my phone approximately 50 times to listen to a robocall from one of the candidates or the other, from somebody else supporting these people, or to have to talk to somebody who wants me to answer survey questions for them. Now, I know they can do this because the lawmakers wrote the law and they said, what the heck? Why should we have to conform with this? We're writing the law. We're exempt. We don't care about people. We're lawmakers. It's just unconscionable the way they abuse my phone. And I'm just wondering, is there anything I can do about it? And don't tell me to talk to a politician, because that's like asking me to talk to Jesus about becoming a Muslim.
Okay. All right, Sandy, what do you say?
Well, I was going to tell you to talk to a politician. I mentioned this earlier, but a member of the State Assembly named Representative Andre Jacques has introduced a bill that would eliminate these political and charitable calls. It would also make the no-call registration permanent, so you wouldn't have to go through the rigmarole of re-registering your telephone numbers on the no-call list every 2 years. If you would call your legislator and ask him to support that bill, that would be a very positive step, I believe.
Probably wouldn't hurt to call the representative who's sponsoring the bill as well.
Right.
And urge
right.
them.
I know people are just really put off by the volume of telemarketing calls or, you know, phone calls they get.
And thank you very much for calling. Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, our guests today. Michelle directs the Bureau of Consumer Protection. Sandy, administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Ag, Trade and Consumer Protection. You can join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post a comment on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. I'm Larry Mehler here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Well, are you on the no-call list? How do you think it worked? Have you had an opportunity, a good or bad experience with a renter or a landlord? Those are some of the things we're talking about today with Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, and, of course, many other consumer protection issues as well as we visit with them. And join us, 1-800-642-1234. Mike in Wauwatosa, we turn to you. Hi, Mike.
Hi. Quick comment and then a question. On the earlier caller on the floor and the window breakage thing, you know, I'd really recommend she gets estimates on window replacement or repair and the floor, as Larry said, to get a floor restoration. Because unless she's got, you know, thousands of dollars security deposit, a simple window repair replacement and a floor refinishing is probably going to take her over most of the rents in northern Wisconsin.
That's a good idea.
Or most of the security deposits, I should say. And, you know, if I'm not misunderstanding this, is from when we've had similar issues, is it's reasonable cost of repair or replacement, depending on the issue. And if there's a broken window, you could easily put that into the replacement category if you can't get a qualified repair person there to do it. So you can simply go and say, okay, I'm going to replace the window and use that as the estimate. So anyway. The question I had is, and this is kind of complicated how we got to this point, but responsible for trying to figure out how to deal with some property that was left in a apartment that where the persons didn't leave a forwarding address. There wasn't a lease involved, so that's one of the complications, but the people left no forwarding address. They left without paying their final rents and so forth. And it's been almost a year, and we've been trying to figure out what can we do with the property that was left in there. There's some furniture and some kids' toys and stuff, and we'd like to either donate or sell it so we can get it out. It's like a half a garage full. But, you know, we don't really know where we stand legally on being able to do that.
Yeah.
Mike, that was a great suggestion. Thanks for giving that to that other the other landlord that you provided as far as problem solving. As far as your issue with the abandoned property is what it's considered under the law. And State Statute 704, which deals with some of those other landlord-tenant issues, covers the steps that you need to do in order to deal with abandoned property. So my suggestion would be that you go to our website, because we have this booklet called The Wisconsin Way for landlords and tenants, and it has all the laws that deal with landlord-tenant issues there. You can download the book for free or just view it there, and you can go into the 704 and look at the step-by-step process that you need to do. It's not overly complicated, but there's steps there, and I wouldn't want to misguide you just quick over the radio. So I just suggest you go to our website and take a look at that.
Just one last question on that. Because we're dealing with this as the original rent and everything was done, with someone, this is in an estate. And so all the parties, we don't even know who the parties are.
Yeah.
Quite mm-hmm. frankly, because my father, who did the original rental and so forth, had passed away. And so I'm not, I'll go and look at those provisions, but are they going to be trying to tell me that I have to do a contact with the person initially, or
there is some notification that needs to happen? But I think that you're able to
advertise that in the paper,
right? That's where my recollection was going. So, because you don't know the specific parties, you may be able to use an address or something and some other form of notification identification in the paper.
So as long as I make a reasonable effort,
yep,
yeah,
then okay,
all right.
All right, thanks.
Yeah, thanks, Mike, for calling. Appreciate your call. We have Teresa in Hartford up next. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Hi. I actually have a concern. We've been dealing with this for a little while now. Our neighbor is running, they decided to run their downspout underneath their sidewalk and is draining into our driveway. And we talked to the building inspector in Hartford, and there's nothing in any ordinance or anything that says that what they're doing is wrong. They said we're supposed to handle it civilly as neighbors, but they're unwilling to do that. Outside of talking to a lawyer and handling it that way, is there anything that you can suggest for us?
Really, once again, we don't have any regulations or laws that it would apply in your situation.
Okay.
But there's always small claims court, depending on the amount of damage, or sometimes hiring an attorney is the way to go.
Okay. All right. All right. Well, thank you so much.
Yep. Thanks so much for calling. Phil in Eau Claire, on to you now. Hi, Phil.
Good morning. Love your show.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ed, great person you have on there. She's been pretty good, and I'm not going to give you a question that she can't answer because I think it's pretty simple. I have an oil filter situation, a quick change oil operation here in Eau Claire that I hired them to change my oil.
Yep.
And I have a little more expensive car that I bought. I got a good deal on it, and it has a special filter. Well, I got the oil change, and when I decided to change the oil myself the next time, for whatever reason, I looked in there, and you could tell that they never changed the filter, because the filter was a special filter that apparently they had to go out and get specially. And the guy told me that owns the place. He says, well, he says, you know, a car like that, you shouldn't come to a place like this anyway. I said, well, why didn't you tell me that, you know, took a special filter and that you charged me more for it? Now, the question I have is I think I have something to go, you know, somewhere, and I don't want to make a big deal of it, but I'd like him to somehow make good on this. Is there, okay, who do I report this to? I basically just tuned in, so I guess maybe I'm repeating something here, but.
Okay.
Have you talked to the person at the shop?
Oh,
to complain?
He called me a big fat liar.
Okay. Usually, you know, we recommend that you approach the person you did business with. If you can't resolve it, and it sounds like you haven't made any headway there, feel free to file a complaint with us. And you can do that by calling our hotline at 1-800-422-7128. And one of the people on the hotline will help you, will walk you through the process.
Okay, I marked it down.
Yeah. All right. Give it a shot. Thank you for calling. Helene in West Bend. Going on to you now. Hi, Helene.
Thanks for taking my call. I may not be making the right conclusion from an experience, but it kind of worked for me. I was getting a lot of calls, the robocalls, the political calls, the nonprofits, and finally got upset with it and signed up for the Do Not Call list. The thing was, the amount of calls I was getting increased after I was put on the list. And it's just my observation, but I got disgusted again, changed the number, got an unpublished number, and the calls dropped off dramatically. However, there's still a couple that will come through, and there's Rachel, that I think everyone knows, who has now become, it appears, to be Anne. And I'm just wondering, are the nonprofits and the political parties getting this list and just purposely calling because they have free access?
Well, we release the list to those telemarketers who are registered with the state of Wisconsin as telemarketers, and they are to scrub their list so it doesn't contain those numbers. We don't just sell the list to anybody. You need to register and pay for your number of lines and be a telemarketer to obtain our list. So one way that I think just general callers in a political charity is, you know, there's the white pages, there's online, there's other marketing companies that definitely do a lot of data mining, collect a lot of information, and sell phone lists. So they may have gotten it that way.
But we have an unpublished number, and we're not getting the calls as much as we used to.
Right. No, I'm sorry. I meant in the past when your amount increased, and now that your number's unpublished, it's not going to be out there in that same fashion in the white pages and things. So that could help explain the decrease in calls.
You can, when you receive those calls from political organizations or charities, you can tell them, please put me on your internal no-call list. And they're required by law to do that, and they're prohibited by law from calling you again.
So they are prohibited once you...
Yes.
Once you tell them, don't call me anymore, they, by law, cannot call you again. The problem I've run into is that so many of these calls you get are recorded calls, and there's nobody to say don't call me anymore too.
That's right. That's what happens. And a lot of times if you call back because of the number it is, it's, you get nowhere. There's no way to leave a message.
Another thing that I might mention is that some of these big telemarketing companies use auto dialers, and they just go through, you know, a sequence of numbers, and that, so those will pick you up whether your number is published or unpublished.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you, Helene, for calling. Appreciate your call. And Joel in Madison, on to you. Hi, Joel.
Hi. I've got a kind of a two-prong question. Regarding the robocalls, I've been getting a lot of calls where it's a machine trying to get you to buy a product, or, you know, soliciting for a bank or whatever the case may be. First question is, I was under the impression that machine response, you know, call back and buy our product was illegal in Wisconsin. And the second prong is, I am on the no-call list, and they're still coming through. I get about 5 of those a week.
Yeah, and
that's
the same problem the rest of us are having, which is that even though you're on the no-call list, people who are ignoring the law will still continue to call you. We've been getting calls this week from a company who claims to be MCI, and they say, please
call us for important information about your phone line. Well, the number they give in their recorded message doesn't match the real MCI's customer service number. So I'm pretty sure that it's a scam of some kind. What you can do is file a complaint with us once again, and that really helps us spot trends. And for instance, with the Rachel robocalls, which was a true scam, we were able to get the word out and let people know this is a scam and hopefully prevent people from losing money. So do file a complaint with us, and any information you can give us, information that's given during the recorded message, if you have a phone number that comes up in your caller ID, give us that. It helps us track this down. And
we can talk some more about that. We need to take a quick look at the news weather. We'll come back to that and talk some more about that. We also have some more information on that downspout issue. Back in a few moments. Great to have you along on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here taking a look at consumer protection issues today with Sandy Chalmers, Administrator of the Division of Trade and Consumer Protection, and Michelle Reinen, Director of the Bureau of Consumer Protection. They are housed in our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. Lots of callers online. We have some emails in, and I think before we get to any of those, I want to go back to the caller who had a question about telemarketing, robocalls, but just telemarketing in general. And Sandy Chalmers, I know you have wanted to complete a comment that you made about that.
Well, I was encouraging him to file a complaint against the no-call violations. And, you know, it's been, since the beginning of the no-call program, the most frequent complaint we get is violations of the no-call law. It helps us identify trends out there. It helps us warn other people who may fall victim to a scam if you report these violations to us. So again, you can file a complaint by calling our hotline at 1-800-422-7128. The other thing I wanted to mention is the deadline, the quarterly deadline to get on the no-call list is coming up at the end of August. If you call to register on your phone numbers on the no-call list, your numbers will go to telemarketers on October 1st. So the end of August is the deadline. You can sign up for no-call by online. It only takes 10 seconds.
Yeah.
Go to our website, nocall.wisconsin.gov.
There we go. We have an email from a building inspector in Bellevue who says you just had a caller that had a complaint about the neighbor's downspout draining onto their property. She said that the building inspector said it was a civil matter. Most municipalities have a nuisance ordinance that is a little vague but should be able to help her. She should call the inspector, the municipality, back and ask about the nuisance ordinance. The water running on her driveway could end up being icy in the winter, for example, and become a safety issue. So, sounds like a good piece of advice to me.
Good advice.
Yeah. Very good. Email from Genevieve from Madison. If someone gets food poisoning from a restaurant and it's proven outbreak, is there any recourse against the restaurant? I don't know if that falls in your purview or not.
It certainly comes under the purview of the department where we work, the Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. We have a division of food safety that regulates those issues. Depending on where you live, you may live in a city that has a city Department of Health that regulates restaurants. But again, call our toll-free hotline number, and we can point you in the right direction on that.
And that's 1-800-422-7128. All right. Christy in Madison, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. This just happened to me last summer, and I'm out of the situation, but I really was very concerned. When I needed an apartment fast, and so I got an apartment fast, but I did know that he hadn't cleaned it, before the people left. Well, what he didn't do, what he said he would do, is there was a, in the basement, there was foundation. Half of the house was under just dirt foundation. And they had had their animals down there, three dogs and a couple of cats, and they'd used that as a bathroom. And it was moldering, and I asked him to take care of it, and nothing got done. And it was so bad when we had, you know, we had the vents open to just air the house out, and it was just everywhere. It was so bad, I broke my lease. And he agreed, but he was so upset, and he wouldn't give me any of my security deposit back because he said that that was, no, we didn't have, we had two parakeets, which were caged and all that stuff. And I just, I was worried about getting something like coccidiomycosis mm-hmm. because it's sitting down there and it's yeah. moldering, and I had to go wash clothes by it. It came up through the vents, which really didn't have closures. It was just a horrible thing. And he got so upset that I wanted to break the lease for that and that I wanted my security deposit back.
That would be one of those situations as it's happening, if you were still in that situation, where you'd definitely want to contact your local building inspector or health department, because that sounds more like a health and safety violation, a city ordinance violation, because it could get into air quality and all of that. So it'd be one of those situations where you'd probably be able to do some kind of formal rent withholding or abatement until the issue is corrected, or maybe they would even do something stricter than that and you'd be able to move out of the premises. But as far as being able to try and get your security deposit back now in a retro because those actions yeah. weren't identified, I think it would come down to a small claims court, and you're talking to a court commissioner and letting them rule on a situation of if you should be able to get your security deposit back.
Well, part of what my question was when I called was not so much that I want my rent back. I don't really care to have anything else to do with that person. But what is the normal thing when you have to go in? Because I did. I sent him the code off that Wisconsin website that you
sure.
that you did, because he listed in his itinerary for me that he had to clean the carpets and mm-hmm. all this other stuff. And I looked in that, and it said that cleaning the carpets is something they have to do normally. Now, this is in Greene County, but I would think that a Wisconsin law thing would be good. He didn't even, I mean, I sent a, I copied, pasted, and sent it to him, and he had no response. And, you know, my thought was, I will take this man to court. But what is normal things when somebody moves out of an apartment or a duplex or wherever, what is the landlord responsible for doing before the next tenant comes in and after this one is there?
The landlord should have the premise in a condition that's acceptable for tenancy. So it's not clearly defined that they need to clean the carpet, that they need to wash the walls, but it needs to be tenantable and not in violation of any health or safety code or building code violations. If there are any of those code violations before they rent you the premise, they need to disclose all of that to you so you can make an informed decision that you're moving into something that's not, you know, maybe up to normal standards, but it needs to be habitable. So should there be something in the basement, some kind of animal discard? No, but there isn't anything clearly in the law that needs to be removed. But that's why you contact your local building inspector, so they can then say this is a health issue and go through those steps. And make sure, you know, disclosure, so you know what you're moving into, and that check-in sheet helps with all of that as well.
Mm-hmm. There you go. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We had an email from Kyle. Have there been any reports of scam text messages? Pretty sure I received one claiming I want an iPad 2, and it gave me a website to go to. Is that one you've heard about, Sandy?
Haven't heard of that one specifically, but I would be very, very cautious about going to that website. Quite often, especially from the text message itself,
quite often those websites can contain viruses that can capture your keystrokes, including, you know, your banking information and your password. So be very, very careful about that. Right now, texting, spam texting is not illegal. And that's something else that's under consideration by the legislature.
Kristen and DePere, on to you now. Hi, Kristen.
Hi, and thanks for taking my call. And I apologize because this is going to get a little convoluted. But to start off, I collect old money. I inherited part of my collection, and I've been building up the other part of it. And as of last year, it had built up to about $600 face value, a bit more for a collector. And I keep the bills, or I kept them, in an envelope in my jewelry box. As of September of last year, I realized I could not for the life of me find the envelope. I thought maybe I'd moved it. I tore the apartment apart. I even checked my car. But to this day, the envelope is gone. And then in May, we were notified by the landlord that we have a new maintenance man because the former one had been fired. He had been entering the apartments and stealing prescription drugs. I found out on my own that about 20 families had come forward saying they had been robbed and that they had been missing money as well. So, a two-part question. Do I even go to the police? Because I have no proof that it was even stolen. And number two, should the landlord have provided us any sort of guidance as to what to do if we suspect we had been robbed?
Okay. What do you think, Michelle?
Personally, I would contact the police department. If you have something that you believe is potentially stolen and that it wasn't just lost, I would go to the police department and see if they'll allow you to file a police report. I mean, that helps you with insurance claims if you need to make one of those. It would help you in any kind of other action. And if they have enough, that helps set up a pattern for them as well to determine if there was some crimes. As far as the landlord providing guidance, well, that there isn't anything, again, in the law. That's kind of a business decision on his side of how he wants to proceed with his relationship with his tenants and what kind of business he wants to operate that way. You know, if there was something connected to the police, need to kind of give the landlord this, too. He may have been advised not to say anything by the police if there was an investigation of sorts, too. So it does get complicated.
Mm. Thank you for calling. Appreciate your call. And we have Sharon in Richfield up next. Hi, Sharon.
Hi. Hi. I was calling regarding the do not call situation. And we are on the list. I call religiously all the time. But these calls have been coming through, and there's three different kinds. I'll give you the worst one first, because this one was just a message, dial, da-da-da-da, get rattled off a phone number to get your party. And I didn't, of course. And went to try to erase it, and I can't erase it. And I worked for days. I finally got, so I erased the message, but it's still, you know how on your voicemail, when you pick up your phone, a lot of them, they go do-do-do-do-do like that? Well, I can't get that to stop. Mm. It's like, I feel like, you know how they tell you not to open on your computer, not to open email where there's no subject line or it's, you know, some money from Africa or something. I feel like somehow somebody's getting the technology to get into your phone.
Hmm. Is that one that you've had, Sandy?
I have not heard of that one.
Well, the one
that is puzzling.
The one prior to that was also kind of really scary. Referred to me by my first name and said that so-and-so, and it was a Hispanic name or Italian, could be Hispanic, and that I should was listed in case of emergency and to please call within 24 hours and regarding case number such and such. And it was just a really nasty sounding whole message.
Now, I have heard that one before.
And then the other ones that are less aggravating, but of course aggravating at all because I'm on the do not call list, are these things where, you know, push three. This is your last chance to borrow money. They don't say borrow, but whatever. Money at 6% or 3% or whatever it is. And those have been coming through. And this is all with somebody on a do not call list.
Yeah.
Right. I said earlier that we do take these complaints on no-call violations very seriously. And unfortunately, what we find quite frequently is that these calls trace to overseas. Mm. So that is way beyond our jurisdiction. But, you know, these telemarketing scams do seem to be on the increase, and it's all technology, and email and voice telephone over the internet are great, but they also open the door to criminals as well.
Now, voicemail, my understanding is, you know, that's kind of within the phone system. You know, we have a lot of portable phones, and it's on the phone base that we got when we set it up. But the voicemail I pay for with MCI.
Mm-hmm. You probably want to contact MCI because, you know, sometimes, you know, even with our work system, it takes a little bit to clear something out or it can get kind of choked up. I mean, you might want to let them know there's a voicemail in there you're unable to clear out and see if they can give you some technical assistance because you are paying for that service.
Right. I was able to eventually clear the message, which I had mixed feelings about because I thought now I don't have the phone number to give you. But I could not get rid of that, you know, signal that tells you you have a voicemail when, in fact, we don't.
Yeah, they might be able to reset or correct the stutter tone into a solid dial tone.
Okay. Right. And then what's the number? You gave a number to report? Because that was the other thing. I didn't know who to report to.
Right. Our hotline number is 1-800-422-7128.
7128.
I want to comment on you talked about the scam where somebody claimed that you were an emergency contact for somebody you knew. I have heard of that one before, and that one scares people to death.
It does.
And these scam artists are so good at preying on people's emotions to get you to give information that can help them commit crimes. And quite often, these scam artists will call and get your bank account numbers, credit card numbers, any kind of personal information that they can then turn around and use to commit fraud.
And so this is a state by state issue, and that's why now we can't find somebody who can deal with these overseas calls.
There is a federal do not call law and list as well, but my point was that our jurisdiction extends only to the borders of the state of Wisconsin. We do partner, though, with federal agencies like the Secret Service, FBI, United States Postal Service. So if you filed a complaint about a company that was operating from overseas, that gets reported up to the federal government, and then they can take that information and act on it.
Okay, in that case, I would have had to... I have retained the message that you just talked about, where I was listed as emergency number. So I would have that information.
Yeah, well, that would be worth it then to pass that along. So, in other words, Sharon should call the 1-800-422-7128, pass that information along, and it then goes to the federal level.
Yeah, we'd take a look at it, and if it's appropriate, we'll send it to the appropriate federal agency to have it get some attention.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. We have... Pete in Onalaska next. Hi, Pete.
Hi. I'm calling about a herbicide. I'm not going to get the name right. I understand that Larry, you...
Imprelis.
Garden Talk recently, but I need to get up to speed on this. This stuff was used by a lawn service that is just as shocked by it as we are. That it's killing 30-year-old pine trees, and we need to know what to do about it. The Lawn Keeper Service says that they're dealing with DuPont, the manufacturer, and that seems like it's going to be terrible to deal with such a big company. Do you have any advice about what to do?
Well, this is going to be an enormous issue across the country, and this is something that's being handled by another division in our department, Ag Resources Management, that regulates pesticide use in the state. They've been working with EPA and Washington on this issue. If I could recommend that you call our hotline number, the one that we've been giving out, 1-800-422-7128, and we'll work to get you in touch with the proper complaint filing system, whatever EPA has directed us to use.
I would bet there's going to be a class action suit.
I would not be surprised. And the latest I've heard is that DuPont, who's the manufacturer, is working out some kind of refund and return policy with stores that still have this product on the shelves. But I don't know if they've worked something out down to the consumer level
yet. Pete's 30-year-old trees, though, haven't been acted upon yet, I don't think.
Right.
No. Yeah, these are big ones.
Yeah, well, you call that number.
I will.
All right, thanks a lot for calling. An email from Scott in Madison. I keep getting emails from a Chinese business, even though I've told them repeatedly to stop sending me emails. Anything to be done?
I just keep hitting the delete button on those and don't open them, don't link. I mean, you've communicated your desire not to receive the email. You can file a complaint with us and we can try and send it to the appropriate federal agency, but there isn't a no email list out there like there is a do not call list.
And we had another email from Marie. My daughter is attending a private beauty school. She signed a contract at the beginning that included the total hours required to graduate and the total cost of her education. If a student misses hours, they must be made up. According to the contract, there was no fee for making up the hours. During the middle of the year, the school officials have imposed an additional fee for every hour that has to be made up. The daughter did not sign any additions to the contract. However, she missed hours and has to make them up. Does she have any recourse now to pay that additional money, or... I'm not sure if this is I assume it's a Wisconsin business.
Yeah, this really is another one of those cases we had earlier today where it gets into more contract law, what you signed, what you didn't. What we could look at if the person filed a complaint is what was clearly disclosed up front and what's being demanded or required now as far as extra payment and things. But I would suggest more along the lines of filing a complaint that way. And seeing how it can be sorted out.
Yeah. Is there anything, we just got a short time left here, anything we haven't covered yet that you wanted to be sure to get in this last minute?
I think one of the most important things is just a reminder, Sandy mentioned it once or twice, is that the Do Not Call registration deadline is coming up for this quarter at the end of the month. And when we get into those last couple days, the phone lines get busier. So it take time today and just make sure your number's re-registered on the no-call list, because you need to do it every 2 years. And you can do that by going to nocall.wisconsin.gov. or calling toll-free in Wisconsin, 1-866-966-2255.
And I believe we probably have up on our Facebook page. Yes, we do. We have the Consumer Protection website.
Good.
So if you go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, you can just click on that, and that'll get you into all the resources that you need. And Sandy and Michelle, thank you so much. We'll
thank
have you,
you
back.
Thank Larry. You.
Sandy Chalmers and Michelle Reinen, our guests today. They're with the Bureau of Consumer Protection in our Wisconsin Department of Agriculture, Trade, and Consumer Protection. And, of course, we've been working with the department for a long time on this, and I'm sure we will be doing it again. Tomorrow, Neil DeBole joins us to talk on Garden Talk. Stay with us.